45 metres back. Bernard Foley.
It's got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance. Over! Over!
Hi there and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host, Mitch. Joined with me this week is Lockie. Now, Lockie, you've been away from the scrum bags side of things for a little while. You're off on a bit of a secret mission. Where are you and what are you up to lately?
Hey, Mitch. Hey, everyone. Yeah, it's a bit of a side quest at the moment. It's been fun. I'm up on the Sunshine Coast with the Aussie under-20s for their inaugural TRC. So we've got Australia, New Zealand, South Africa and Argentina all rolling up there over the next 2 weeks. It's going to be busy. The poor bloke's got 3 games in 11 days, so it's a really quick turnaround for them. But, mate, it's super exciting up here. We've got our first games tomorrow, so Thursday, when this is in your ears, listeners, and really looking forward to it. So they're all double headers on Stan Sport, and we can't wait. The boys are really, really talented from what we've seen through training, and I'm excited to see how they go.
Is there anyone in particular that's standing out as like either just bigger than you're anticipating, bigger than everyone else, faster or just a little bit more skilled? Who's standing out to you so far?
Oh, look, no one so far. There's a few boys backing up from last year's World Cup who are the two captains. So you've got Toby McPherson and Ronan Leahy, who'll be leading this side around. So it's good to have a bit of experience there, but there's a lot of fresh faces, and that's what I like. It's that sense of the unknown. I think that's a big draw card for the tournament is we don't have or haven't until now had that access to the pathways and seeing what's coming through. You can watch the Super 16s and 19s, but this is the top quality. This is the cream of that crop. So I'm super excited just to be there, even as a spectator, and then I'll have to remember that I'm working on top of it as well. So it should be a couple of really, really good games.
And for those that aren't too familiar with the competition, so this is it somewhat mirrors the rugby championship that we know with Australia, New Zealand, South Africa and Argentina, but it is an under-20s version and it is a condensed format. So what, it's played over 3 weeks or 11? You said just before 11 days?
Yeah, just 11 days. So they play it as double headers, all at the same location on the Sunshine Coast. So you got games on the 2nd of May, the 7th, and then the 12th. And it's just a ladder system. So the team with the most accrued competition points over those 3 games takes out the trophy. And if you see picks online, look through Sans Rugby AU socials, it's a big trophy. It's a big trophy, put it that way. They've gone all out. It's like Super 10 style. Totem pole kind of situation. It's massive. So we did a shoot yesterday. It all looks great. And yeah, like I said, I can't wait. It's such a cool concept and I'm really glad that they're doing it now because it gives them a good run into World Cup later in the year. And I reckon there'd be a fair few super clubs and franchises with their eyes on this very closely.
Now, there's been a lot of talk this week around Anzac Day and the need for an Anzac Day Bledisloe test between the Wallabies and the All Blacks. You're in sort of a junior under-20s camp at the moment. Has there been any whispers or talks of maybe a baby Bledisloe coming up or something like that for the two teams to play for?
Yeah, it's interesting. They've played a fair bit of Trans-Tasman footy in the past for under-20s, and then it used to be a fused 18s and schools, so there's a few different tiers that compete Trans-Tasman. Last year, they played a 2-game series across the ditch in New Zealand. So we won the first game and dropped the second from memory. So I'm not sure if that's going to be played again, given we've got this competition. But yeah, the New Zealand game is certainly a big one. And I'm quite excited that that's the final game. It frames, regardless of how we're going through the tournament, as, the be-all and end-all. And I'm hoping that, they're both 2-0 heading into that one and you get a mini Bledisloe as a bit of a teaser for it. Just the scene set really well up here. It's a good atmosphere. All the teams share the same dining hall, same training facility. So it's up close and personal. And I think it's going to be a terrific atmosphere. If you're up on Sunny Coast, come down. Tickets are free. You get 2 amazing games of footy for absolutely nothing when you roll on down. So we'd love to see you all there. And yeah, get your gold on.
Where's it getting played at?
Sunshine Coast Stadium. So okay. If you're up there, it's where they've played, maybe a little bit of NRC back in the day. I feel like Queensland Country might have had a game or two up there. But it's a great facility, nice grassy hills around and a big stadium too. So, yeah, come on down, say good day. It'd be awesome to have a bit of a crowd building.
And the games are on Stan as well. So if you're not Queensland or Sunshine Coast based, you can also tune in on Stan and make sure you cheer the boys on in gold, and hopefully they can get through and win the inaugural under 20s rugby championship, which would be awesome. So what we're going to do tonight.
Yeah, we're going 3-0.
That's right. That's right. What we're going to do tonight, we are recording a bit later in the week. We did miss our Monday deadline. There is an episode already out that Ando had an interview with a mate of his who's starting up a new schools competition in Northwest Sydney. If you haven't listened to that, I do recommend you go and do that. Something a little bit different, not so much Super Rugby or Super W focused, just something a little bit more schools based. So if you haven't listened to that, do go ahead. That was out on Monday. So tonight we're going to focus on the games coming up. So round 11 of Super Rugby Pacific. We also will touch briefly on the Super Rugby Women's Final that was played on Sunday, because that was a cracking game and the Waratahs got up. So we need to bask in that glory as much as we can. But yeah, we will focus a little bit more on previewing in this podcast as opposed to reviewing like we normally do. So why don't we just get into things, and we'll start off with Super Rugby Women's. And the New South Wales Waratahs have come away victorious for the fifth time. They stopped the Fijiana Indrua getting a three-peat in Super Rugby Women's history. 50-14 was the final score. Lockie, you were there at Ballymore on Sunday afternoon. How good of a performance was this from the women in Sky Blue?
Yeah, it was clinical. It was clinical. We saw them up 17-0, quick sticks, and then the Drua started to reel it back, but discipline again undoing the Drua, and you can't play without 15 on the paddock against that Waratahs team. It's basically a Wallaroos A team at this point. They've got stars across the park, and that extra space that was afforded to them out wide in the second half, ruthlessly exploited by the people that have been doing it all year. The Maya Stewarts, the Desiree Millers, the Caitlin Hulses. It was a bit of a romp towards the end there, but thoroughly deserving. I think it would have been a travesty, honestly, if the Drua had pinched that from the Tars, because they'd been so consistently good through the year. I think they were up, you know, their points difference was positive 150 through the season, and they'd just been creaming everyone and so convincing in the semi-final, only fitting that they do a number on the Drua and end what's been a pretty impressive start to the Drua's campaign in Super Rugby Women's as well. Mate, as a Tars fan, you must be thrilled. You're the Tars still on.
Yeah, really, really happy for the girls. They deserve this one. As you said, it's been a really good season from them. Haven't lost a game, haven't really had any tight competition. So to win the final in the same type of manner is ecstatic for the girls. But I guess flipping the coin a little bit, the score, looking at it, 50-14, if you weren't following the game or you haven't seen the highlights, you do sort of think, wow, this must have been completely all one way to the Waratahs. And for a large part of it was. But the Drua do have to be given a little bit of a pump up in that early in the second half, they came back to within, I think, 4 or 5 points of the Waratahs, and they did get close. But as we've said all season, discipline is the thing that undid them. And two yellow cards in quick succession, a second yellow card towards the end of the game, which resulted in a red card. Just silly things from the Drua, throwing opposition points away, and you can't go down to 13 players against a team like the Waratahs and expect to be in it in the final. And that's ultimately what we saw. The Waratahs from that point just took it up a notch, increased the physicality, increased the ruck speed, and threw it wide and just scored points left, right, and center.
And physicality was the key, right? We saw the Fijian pack in previous iterations of Super Rugby Women being the difference. You know, we focused so much on the wingers out wide, and there was so much concern around Adelaide Burner coming into this one after scoring a hat-trick against the Force. But Fiji's success is built on a big pack, a big mobile pack that goes hard at the line. And the Tars stepped up and matched and exceeded them. So, you know, Atasi Lafai runs away with best on ground. I thought she was phenomenal. Her ball carriers were so strong. She bent the line. Piper Duck stood up massively as well. She had a really good shift. And then a bit unheralded because, you know, Desi and May were getting all the tries, but Georgina Fredericks had an incredible defensive game as well at 13. So, you know, all the usual suspects, all the Wallaroos putting their hand up and really stamping themselves, especially when they had the player advantage.
We spoke last week around, in our preview, around how the Drua, Buna particularly at fullback, was such a weapon for them. And she almost single-handedly won them the spot into the final against the Western Force last week. That was one area that we said the Waratahs needed to shut her down, not give her space or time with ball in hand. And they did that very well. She was frustrated. In the last 20 minutes of the game, I think she'd only touched the ball a handful of times, and she'd made meters, just meters, with the ball in hand. Wasn't given the space, wasn't given the time to play the style of rugby that she liked. And the pressure that they applied to her, you could tell she was getting frustrated because she started to make mistakes, kicking kicks out on the full, throwing balls to ground instead of to players. And it started to really seep into the Drua players across the team. You could tell they were getting frustrated. And that last yellow card was just completely unnecessary. And you could tell that was just pure frustration at that point, that they lashed out and did something so silly.
Yeah, silly stuff. And you're right about Boona. She had her chances. There was a spot just before half time where I think they ran it out from their own probably 5 meter line. The Drua made a line break, and then on a 2-on-1 receiving it, Boona just drops it cold. Any other day, she runs 60 meters and scores, and the scores are just about level at half time. So I think psychologically, massive blows just around half time that saw them ultimately spiral in the second. But yeah, credit to the Tars. I think it's awesome that they got the job done. And yeah, year of the Tars still on, like we said.
Maybe not so much in terms of men, but definitely for the women. Now, Joe Yap has named her first squad for the Wallaroos in 2024. I don't have the graphic up in front of me. I was frantically trying to get it up while you were just talking there, Lockie. But you've seen the squad. Was there anyone in particular that you were surprised didn't make it, or anyone who was lucky to make this squad?
I don't think there were any real surprises. A few veteran players and seasoned players that have missed out, which was interesting to see. But I think at the end of the day, people were rewarded for their personal form and for their team success as well and their role in it. So you saw lots of Tars because the Tars won, not so many Reds because the Reds finished with a spoon. So I think it all balanced out at the end. What I was excited to see, though, Mitch, was the addition of a development group, which I thought was really, really cool. So players like, who do they have? Nat Wright. Who else was in the development scene? Warrior Ellis. You know, young players who are coming up through the ranks,
yep,
that are getting a look in. They're not necessarily going to, you know, be blooded, but are getting, I think it's a sign that Joe Yap's really looking to build depth, not just the top, you know, 15. We're looking at the top 40 and making sure that they're ready to step up to the international plate. Pretty crazy to see someone like Shalom Sasua, the 16-year-old from Queensland, getting a look in the main squad as well. Like, there are some wild selections in there.
Yeah, it's a really balanced squad, I think, in a lot of regards. There's been other podcasts that have talked about it already this week, but the easy thing, if you were Joe Yap, you could just say, let's pick the Waratahs 23 and maybe sprinkle in a few players like Ash Masters and some other players that sort of make up that squad there. She hasn't necessarily gone that way, though. There are some Waratahs players who didn't make the squad. There are a lot of players who this is their first time in Wallaroos that have come through that Waratahs platform, which is awesome to see. But there are, to their credit, other players as well from across the franchises that have made it in. Ash Masters has had a great season. Awesome to see her rewarded with another cap and inclusion into this squad. If you had to pick out one or two players from this wider squad that you're really excited to see get time in gold, who would it be?
Oh, easy start for me is Sammy Wood from the Force. She had such a good year. I mentioned her a few times in previous episodes about her role as a kicking halfback, and I think she's got massive potential. So super excited for her. Probably a clear second on the pecking order at the moment behind Lane Morgan, who had a terrific game in the final. But, you know, no Jazz Hirawai opens the door for a second halfback option in the main squad, and Sammy Wood, I reckon, is going to do an awesome job. So that one's exciting for me. The second one that I was really keen to see is Biola Dawa from out of the Brumbies. So much is made of the Brumbies pack and how solid they've been, but Biola's been around for a while now and has had some really good games marking up against some of the best. You know, she's been on Desi Miller, she's been on Vani Wong, and she's done a job on both of them. So it's really cool to see someone like that be rewarded off the back of an improved season for the Brumbies as well. So, a few from some of the smaller clubs getting a bit of love, which I love to see.
Avania Wong's one of the players that did miss out on this squad, which I was a little bit surprised about. She played big minutes under Jay Tregoning for the Wallaroos last year. So I guess the talents that are out wide and in the back three across Super Rugby Women's this season has shown that there unfortunately isn't a place for her in Joe Yap's squad.
I think it's just a sign that, you know, we have better depth and that we want to build it. I seriously doubt that that's the last we'll see of Vania. I imagine that she'd be the kind of player that bounces back and rips in and maybe gets a look in later in the year for WXV and other events coming up. You know, we've got a World Cup around the corner in 2025 in the UK. And I imagine a lot of these players who featured heavily in what was a pretty good WXV campaign last year and missed out, they'll be staking their claim really heavily for a World Cup squad. So it's like at the end of the day, we want to see more players competing at a higher level. And looks like JAP's really trying to drive that.
Yeah, one player that I'm really excited to see get her first inclusion in the Wallaroo squad and hopefully get some game time under Joe Yap is Caitlin Hulse. She's been awesome for the Waratahs these past 2 years. And, I mean, she's only like 16 or 17, so she's still very young and slowly getting better and better and as she ages. But she's been incredible at fullback for the Waratahs this year and well and truly earns that selection into the squad. Now, what is coming up for the Wallaroos next? In a few weeks, they play their first test against Canada. Now, Canada did kick off the Pacific Four series this past weekend with a game against the USA. 50-7 was the final score there in Canada's favor. The Wallaroos are going to have their work cut out for them to get things in order for that first test in just a few weeks.
Massively. It's a tight turnaround. From memory, last year we played the Canadians over there in, what was it held in, Toronto or Vancouver, one of their main cities, and they did a bit of a number on us to finish out the Pac-4 season last time around. So home soil, you know, we do get that advantage. I'm looking forward to that as part of a doubleheader with the Tars game. And, you know, it's exciting. It's an exciting new era for us. You know, there are lots of, you know, good things to highlight about the end of Jay Treloning's tenure, but got Joe Yap in as a full-time coach, a fresh pair of eyes coming in with vast playing and coaching experience. I think it's a pretty good time to be an Aussie rugby fan with all this coming up.
Yeah, really exciting. There's so much that's happening in terms of both under-20s, Wallaroos, Wallabies to be named very soon, and transitioning across into Super Rugby Pacific, we had round 10 played over the weekend. And it was the Anzac weekend. It was the fixtures. Every Australian team played every New Zealand team. And we came out of it, I don't know, I'll ask you, Lockie, how did you think we came out of that sort of Anzac round? Going into it, we had the opportunity to come away for three or four wins across Kiwi. We came away with one. How did you sort of rate our performance across the weekend?
Well, you can't give it a pass, right? Like one from five's not a pass on the Trans-Tasman. On the Trans-Tasman frame, unfortunately. Probably a couple of games that we should have got up. I mean, the Highlanders force game we'll get into a bit later was a bit of a scrap, but anyone could have taken that one. I thought the Tars looked really good in their first half, and then the Reds dropped one late. So, you know, in another world, it's flipped around and we're up 4-1. It's about us being able to close out these tight games, right? You know, we're judged on, as Australian rugby teams and fans, our ability and capacity to beat the Kiwis, and we just didn't do it this time.
That's right. We came so close in so many fixtures. I mean, the Waratahs, as you said, played so well for that first 25-ish minutes of that game. We're up 12-0, and then the Chiefs definitely came home and ran away with it. The Reds were winning with 10 minutes to go. They're up by 11 points, and they end up letting it slip 34-41. So the Western Force, again, 7-6 to the Highlanders. That was a scrappy, as scrappy a game I think I can remember seeing at this level. Just trash, basically, is how you say it. But the highlight, the jewel in the crown, was the Brumbies 27-19 against the Hurricanes, the competition leaders. They hadn't lost a game leading into this, and the Brumbies did the unthinkable in Canberra and took the scalp.
We say unthinkable, but they've got such a good record over the Canes at home. Like a couple of quarterfinals back-to-back that they've beaten them in, really high-pressure games and moments. And that first 20 minutes, the Brumbies were unbeatable. They're untouchable. The way that they were able to move the peel around, it looked like they'd found their mojo again. So you see, you know, Noah goes over down the blind side from that maul play really quickly. And then Tamati Tua and Ollie Sapsford score within about a minute of each other to blow it out. And you're thinking, this Ponies team can go. You know, they were atrocious, let's be honest, against the Blues a week prior. And then to turn it around against the Canes and give them a hiding in that first 20 was impressive. I'm more excited that they held on, right? We saw more than one Australian team this week build a lead and then let it slip the Brumbies were able to manage that game really well, which impressed me the most. I think that was the most pleasing aspect.
I think for mine, the most pleasing aspect was seeing some of their Wallabies players return from injury. So Alan Alatoa starts in the 3 jersey for them.
Huge.
Yeah. Plays big minutes or plays, well, I think, just over third half or more of rugby for them, but gets through that, looks composed, leads them really, really well. We've also got Lenny Kitau as well back from injury. And with those players back in the 23 or in the 15 even, it allowed the Brumbies to play their style. We have seen throughout the season so far, they haven't quite been able to nail down the Brumbies style. Their maul hasn't looked great. Their scrum has struggled at times. But with those players back, they looked strong and dominant in every facet. And, I mean, they were scoring tries off mauls, if not through the maul try themselves, at least setting that platform to score points from, which we haven't quite seen since Dan McKellar left a few seasons ago.
Yeah, look, the Piggies were all their slaves. I thought we give him plenty of props, but Bobby Valentini was unbelievable with ball in hand. I think he carried over 18 times, really bent the line. Out wide, Tamani Tua played like a man possessed. I was watching that game and covering it for work and thinking, we haven't seen that from him this year. And he was busting the line at every stage. He finishes with 11 tackle busts, runs for over 120 metres. He just refused to be tackled. And that physicality, it's an energy that you take to the line. You don't often see to that degree, but his leg drive was terrific. He made defenders work to get him to ground. And that's what I really liked, that bit of extra grit and aggression from the Brumbies, especially, cold day in Canberra. You want to make it a cold place to come as well.
That's right.
So I'm really impressed with the Brums.
Now let's move across to your boys, the men in red. Queensland Reds, Blues, 34-41, final score in this one. 11 to go, 10 to go. The Reds are up by 11 points and they let it slip. How frustrating as a Queensland Reds fan was it to watch the score slowly slip away from you?
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. The last 10 minutes were awful, honestly. Like the hype that had built around Tim Ryan's hat trick, the Junkyard Dog, all those stories that are coming out even still after the loss. But yeah, to have that lead was so exciting and they worked really hard for it, but to lose it is gutting because it's the fifth loss that the Reds have had this season, right? And all 5 losses have been by single digits. 2 of them have been in overtime. So yeah, the Reds could be anywhere up to an undefeated season from the way that they've carried on. They've lacked that polish at the end, which is really, really disappointing to see because they've clearly got the talent there. Just the killer blow. Couldn't land the killer blow. So,
I mean, there's two. For mine, there's two ways you can look at this game. On the one hand, you can look at this at the Queensland Reds led the Blues with 10 points to go, with 10 minutes to go by 11 points without the likes of Fraser McWright, Tate McDermott, James O'Connor, like some of their big key players out with injury or unavailable through suspension. And yet they did enough and they were showing enough to lead the Blues and to be dominant in most facets. But the other side of it is that you can look at this and see squandered opportunities throughout the 80 minutes. Suliasi Vunivalu drops that ball in the opening few minutes of the game, pretty much untouched in the in goal, just needs to put it down and he knocks it on. They then go and let the Blues score 10 points after that. And after a few minutes, they're 10 points down. On full time, they get a full arm penalty. They kick it out. They go to the line out and they end up turning it over, if not from the line out, very soon afterwards. And the Blues just spread it wide and score and win the game. It's just those little things there is when, I mean, at that time, the penalty, at that time, it was 80 minutes on the clock. If they kicked it, the ball live, took a quick tap and kicked it out. They get a few minutes off, they get to regather and they go to Golden Point. So it's just the gamemanship or the rugby smarts wasn't quite there for the Reds. And I think that for mine was the most frustrating element.
Yeah, it's an interesting decision. Do you wind down the clock and take it extra time or do you try and use the platform from an attacking line out? Because what they probably started that attacking line out 45 metres out from the Blues line. So it wasn't as though they were going to maul it over and they go quite wide from that set play, drop it midfield, break comes the other side from Caleb Clark with no opposing winger because the Reds were out of position defensively. So yeah, it's probably a tough one for them to look back on. You think maybe you can wind the clock down next time, but this Reds team, you know, with my Reds hat on, I still think that this are so close. I don't know what's needed to get these final wins, whether it's a better management, like you mentioned, through the last 5 minutes when you're up. Do you try and push your advantage? How do you manage a lead? Now, these are questions that the Reds nearly need to consider ahead of that Crusaders game, because they're going to come up against a side that's just flogged the Rebels and sparked their season back to life.
Yeah, that's right. So moving on, I mean, I am conscious of time and how much we've got, and we do need to preview the upcoming round. Crusaders 39, Melbourne Rebels 0. A really horrific night for the Melbourne Rebels. Considering coming into this, the Rebels, I think, were fourth on the table. The Crusaders were 10th, 11th or 10th at that point. This win, this bonus point win too, the Crusaders has shot them up to 8th on the table. They're now in finals contention. Hopefully this isn't, touching wood as I record this, hopefully this wasn't the snap where the Crusaders have switched on and are going to make their run and win the whole bloody competition at the end of the season. I don't think they do have the talent to do it this year, but how frustrating is it to see that they've just been sort of struggling throughout the season, 10 rounds, and just not really getting going, and now they're already in eighth
place. Yeah, biding their time. You know, imagine finishing with a minor premiership and you take on the Crusaders in a quarterfinal on that kind of form. If they can keep it up, it's a tough look. But yeah, look, the Rebels, I guess we got to point out, that's probably the main focus from this. That scrum went backwards. They replaced the whole front row before halftime and still conceded a total of 7 scrum penalties. It was bedlam up front.
And that was a bit of a trend of the weekend. And that was one thing that I was kind of happy about come Sunday after, or Saturday afternoon after the Reds and Blues game, was that there was no more Australia versus Kiwi opposition to watch scrums get absolutely chewed up. The Crusaders were making absolute mincemeat of the Queensland Reds, the Melbourne Rebels scrum. The Chiefs were spitting out the Waratahs at every opportunity. Even the Brumbies did get parity and were dominant in that facet. But even the Western Force struggled against the Highlanders scrum. All across the weekend, we just didn't seem to be able to take it to the Kiwis, which is frustrating and kind of alarming leading into the Wallaby season later in the year.
Yeah, huge test for front rows coming up. I'm interested to see some of the matchups heading into this week, like particularly the Reds front row going over to Christchurch. That's going to be a good challenge. But the main one at scrum time that I'm interested to see is how the Tars hold up against the Hurricanes. Like, we've got the Tars are missing Tom Ross, I think, heading into this week as well. So that's another big tight head out. And that Hurricane scrum has been so good all season. So that's probably a really good place to start for previews, Mitch, with your boys heading over to Wellington against the ladder leaders. Hell of a test.
Yeah, I'm worried, to put it mildly. The Waratahs up against the Hurricanes in the Cake Tin Friday night, 5 o'clock kickoff. Look, the Waratahs, I heard a stat this week that they've got 7 of their contracted first-rate props out injured at the moment, and Darren Coleman and the coaching staff are scrambling to try and get props from Shoot Shield or all over around the country to get to New South Wales, to get to Darcyville and be able to train minutes with the squad to be able to play on the weekend. Looking at the team that they've named this weekend, I mean, it's kind of worrying. Hayden Thompson-String is back this week after he had a week off last week through, I think it was a hammy twinge. Julian Heaven's been good at hooker and Harry Johnson-Holmes at tight head, but this is not the Waratahs front row that we've been expecting and plauding leading into 2024 with the likes of Angus Bell and Mahi Vaiolanu, Dave Parecki, all of these guys out injured, and it's just getting worse and worse for the Waratahs.
Yeah, it's tough up front. I like what's going in the back line for the Tars. Interested to see how Nwanga Nitawasi goes at full back. Riley's been strong. Will Harrison gets his first start, from what I understand as well. So exciting things to come on that side. How do you see it playing out, though? It will be a tough game.
I don't think the Waratahs have the team or haven't named the team to really trouble the Hurricanes. They'll be hurting from the loss last week against the Brumbies. So they'll want to put in a big performance. They know what they need to do to continue to win out the rest of this season of Super Rugby as the top of the table. So I expect a big score or big, strong physical game from them. Some of the way the Waratahs fronted up last week against the Chiefs, particularly in that first 25-ish minutes, was impressive. The likes of Ned Hannigan, I can't remember if Hannigan played last week.
He played at eight.
Yes, that's right. So Hannigan, oh, I've just had another mind blank of the his name that gives away all the cards. Anyway.
Swinton.
So the forward pack really... Swinton, that's it. Lucky Swinton. I was going to say the bleach blonde hair at the top, but I wasn't sure if you'd get that. Lucky Swinton, those guys had really big impacts and were able to take it to the Chiefs. But we've got Hannigan out this week with injury. We've had Jed Holloway out again with injury this week. The lineouts without Jed Holloway last week didn't function. And so I don't see a way that the Waratahs can arrest the momentum and the physicality that's going to come from the Hurricanes front row and the forward pack. The backs will be able to match it, I think. I've got no real issue with them. But I just think up front, we're not going to be able to match it. And it's just going to be, we'll go backwards at scrum time. We're not going to be able to get any ball at line out. And it's going to be a bit of a long night, unfortunately.
Long night. It could be a long night for the Rebels as well, but we're hopeful for them. They're coming up against the Blues here in Melbourne. So returning home after a spanking in Crusader Town. Can the Melbourne boys bounce back?
Well, they've named Taniela Tupou to start this week. So that shows kind of where we're at in terms of managing his minutes and what the impact that he can bring and what they're expecting from this Blues front row. They've also got Isaac Kalea starting in the one jersey with Sam Talakai coming off the bench. So obviously they're hoping that they can provide enough of a platform to start the game and to lead well. And whether it's going to be a consistent theme this season, moving on around replacing scrums early on in the half if it's not working, like they did last week, I'm not too sure. But I personally probably would have preferred to see Talakai and Tupou try and fit into the same front row if possible.
Oh, Sammy's mostly playing tight head, but it's an interesting one to see with, you know, the strength that you offer Matt Gibbon and Sam Talakai, both Wallabies, but had a tough run against the Crusaders in that starting team and did get hooked before halftime. So maybe it's just a case of keeping combinations together at this point. Ulassi, you know, a pretty renowned scrummager there. So interesting to see how he goes up against Tuonga Fassi and Riccatelli, because they don't have Angus Taalvo starting in this side for the Blues as well. And he was a big part of the late dominance that the Blues were able to get before he went off against the Reds. So I'm interested to see how they go at scrum time. But that the back line that the Blues are able to roll out with Caleb Clark, AJ Lamb, Riku Ioane, Mark Talia, like that's an all-black quality back line. And that, for me, is going to be the biggest challenge. They've seen the Rebels go a Proctor-Feliuai combination in the midfield. Andrew Kellaway fullback, Dalgunu goes to the wing. Lockie Anderson offers cover off the bench. So I expect the Rebels to respond, Mitch. I'm not sure if their response is going to be enough to douse a red-hot Blues. I'd probably say Blues by 10 at this point. Have you got a tip for me?
Yeah, I'd say Blues by 10 to 12.
Yeah, we'll see how they go down there. Looking forward to it.
I think one of the things for the Rebels last week that they really struggled, that the loss of Lukan Salakai-Loto, I think, was is impacted their 15 a lot more than most people anticipated. I think the stability that he brings at scrum time was clearly lacking, and the replacement second rowers that came on just weren't able to shore up the scrum like that. We've seen that they've been so good this year at scrum time, and with him not there, they just went backwards and changed the front row. It didn't really have that effect. So with him out for a lengthy period now, I think they're going to really struggle to try and replicate the stability that he brought to the set piece.
I totally agree. It's a huge loss, and we're hoping that he's back in action at some stage before finals to see if the Rebels can finally break their duck and get into that top eight for a bit of knockout footy. Moana and Highlanders, we can probably skip over that one, Mitch, and look at our Aussie mates over in Christchurch. It's going to be the Crusaders against the Reds. The Crusaders have named a hell of a side. You've got Lee Halfpenny back in the mix. The Welsh international gets a run at fullback. David Harvey named at 10 is an interesting one, but that's a huge challenge for the Reds. They do get Fraser McWright back, which is a bit of a boost for them. But yeah, it's going to be a tough trip over there when the Crusaders have their tail up. What do you reckon about this one?
The interesting thing with this one was to see how what Les Kiss did with his wings. Tim Ryan was so good in the start last week that you would expect him to continue, but Matt Greely has been so good all season that trying to find space for both of them, the ultimate decision was you bench Sulivunavalu and start both of these guys together. So I'm excited to see how he goes for his second week at Super Rugby. If he can have the same impact that he did last week against the Blues, against the Crusaders team, then he's nearly single-handedly won them that game last weekend. So the Reds will rely on him to be as dominant as he was last week for them to have any shot in Christchurch.
A huge matchup for him coming up against Sebu Reese, who's probably been the form back of the tournament. It's going to be awesome to see how the Junkyard Dog goes against him. Any more to pick out of that Reds-Crusaders matchup?
It's going to be an interesting one. I think having Fraser McWright back is going to do massive things just in terms of leadership that he brings for that forward pack and just getting the boys back on task and focusing on the next thing. So we've seen this Crusaders team throughout the season sort of meander in the opening few rounds. They're in games at times, but they don't have the execution to really finish things off. Having Lee Halfpenny come in is going to really be that sort of stability that they've lacked, I think, in terms of just game experience and knowledge. So my heart says Reds, my head says Crusaders here. I hope this one's not a big win. I think if this was played at Suncorp, the Reds can show up and smash the Crusaders and get a dominant victory here. But I think playing it in Christchurch sort of flips that around a bit and, I'm not really quite sure how it'll go.
Yeah, flip a coin. And like all these Aussie teams, you've got to win games over the ditch to be a genuine contender. So a huge challenge for the Reds and a similarly huge challenge for the Force. They're heading over to Hamilton to take on the Chiefs. The Chiefs rolling out another stacked team. You've got Damien McKenzie running the cutter, Quintu Pyre and Anton Leonard-Brown, all black centre pairing, Amoni Narawa on one wing, and Eteni Nanai-Satouro moves to fullback in the absence of Sean Stevenson. I'm not sure what he's been ruled out with. It might be management, but...
It's a hamstring. He got a hamstring injury scoring against the Tars last week. 2 to 3 weeks, they're looking like. I'm currently trying to figure out whether... I've got him in my fantasy team. He's been fantastic for me all season. Trying to figure out whether I hold on to him through this next 2 weeks or I trade him for someone else. But the Force are going to have their work cut out for them to be competitive against the Chiefs. If they play like they did last week against the Highlanders, the Chiefs will just completely run through them. The physicality that they started in that game against the Waratahs was next level. That was test match intensity. That was crazy. There was blokes flying everywhere, massive hits, a few of them a little bit high, and that's what cost them early on and allowed the Waratahs to keep in the game and to set that 12-0 scoreline. If the Western Force don't front up physically against that Chiefs line, we're looking at a cricket score.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough for the Force. It's good to see Jeremy Williams back in the starting side. That's a big boost. Will Harris moves into the sixth role with Tommy Franklin back, Reid Princep at eight, and then you've got Rodder and Wells coming off the bench in the forward pack. So a bit of experience to come on. It'll be a huge challenge. I'd love to see the Force go over there and push them. But I think you'd be a brave man to tip against the Chiefs in Hamilton for that one, Mitch. Our last game.
The thing with the Western Force this season, though, is like last week was a bit of an anomaly for them. They've played well through the season. The week before against the Crusaders, they smashed them and they were dominant. So you just don't know which Western Force team is going to show up. They have the personnel, they have the cattle to take it to the Chiefs, but they need to show up and they all need to be red hot and switched on. I don't have any doubt in their ability to trouble the Chiefs. I just don't know if they're going to show up and do that. So if Simon Cron can get them back focused on a full 80-minute performance, then maybe they can keep the Chiefs at just a few points. And they come in and show us all up and do Australia proud. Just don't know with this Western Force team this season.
Wouldn't that be a hell of a scout across the ditch, getting the Force up for a win and pushing towards the eight? That's what we want to see. We want to see all five Aussie teams up in the eight, and the one that's probably looking the most secure, Brumbies playing at home again off the back of their win over the Hurricanes. They take on the Fijian Drua at Canberra to round it out. Saturday night game, live and on-demand Stan Sport and Nine Gem. Big game for the Brumbies.
Is it just me, or does it feel like the Brumbies have played every game this season at home?
Yeah, it feels like it.
Like, it just feels like they're always playing in Canberra. In Canberra,
yeah. So someone's going to do it. Someone's going to do it. They're looking pretty good, Nick, after that Hurricanes game. I guess the Drua always a bit of an unknown quantity when they're travelling. Not quite sure what to expect. They're coming off a tight, scrappy win over Moana. Do you see the Drua really challenging the Brumbies at home?
I think they can. If it's a question of if they can, yes, they definitely can. But I think the Brumbies have... They know what they need to do to put in a performance like they did last week against the Hurricanes. And I don't think they're going to show up again and perform like they did against the Blues. Like, if you listen to some of the interviews and sort of media that's come out from that win over the weekend, they all said that they took that loss pretty hard, and they looked at themselves and they realized that just as a team, they didn't front up and they weren't switched on and they didn't play Brumby-style rugby in that Blues game. So I don't think Stephen Larkham's going to let them have that type of performance again this season. I would expect the Brumbies to have a really physical game this week and try and shut down the Drua as much as possible, keep the ball off them, keep the, you know, don't allow the up-tempo offload style game that the Drua want to play.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting to see how they manage, the Brumbies manage their kicking with Ravel Tamunda being moved to the back. So he's off his usual right wing and he's playing fullback. And I think that opens up so many attacking opportunities for the Drua on the counter. So really interesting to see how Goddard, who's starting nine, Lolasio and Tom Wright all manage their way around the park with so many threats at the back.
Yeah.
Which is going to be interesting. And then, of course, the Valentini battle, Kimu versus Rob Valentini. not sure how much they're going to see of each other, but I imagine that'd be one hell of a collision in the middle of the field, mate. Anything more to add to the Brumbies, Drua?
No, I think the Brumbies, at least 10 points if I had to pick it for this one.
Yep. It'll be a hell of a game coming up and hell of a round too. I was left wanting more after that Anzac round where we just didn't quite get there. So I'd love to see a few more tick over the line, Mitch. It's going to be a great weekend of footy. So make sure you tune in where you can. And tune into our juniors as well. I'm going to plug it. Why not? Make sure you get on there when you're listening tomorrow. It'll be Thursday. Jump on, have a watch on Stan if you've got it, and get around the Aussie boys from 7 p.m. We just can't wait. There's too much footy going on.
It's not a bad problem to have. It's probably the best problem to have at this time of year. When it's cold, it's wet, and you just want to sit at home on the couch and watch some good football. So really excited to see how our under-20s do go against Argentina tomorrow night. We've got Wallaroos in a few weeks. We've had Super W wrap up last week. The Super Rugby Pacific teams keep continuing to push. So it's a really exciting time to be an Australian rugby fan. We'll leave it there for this week. We'll be back next week where we pack down or analyze everything from round 11 of Super Rugby Pacific and then look forward to round 12. Thanks everyone for getting to this point of the podcast. We'll be back next week. We'll see you then. Bye.